Mark Ludicky back with you at the Scouting Post, continuing my ongoing series previewing the 2016-17 Boston Bruins. I've been going position by position, started with the centers, then moved over to right wing, over to left wing. The forwards are in the books, just calling it like I see it, and now we're moving on to the final two positions left on the team. And instead of going with defense, we're going to start from the net and move out today. And we're going to go with the goaltenders. It's going to be a shorter podcast because, quite frankly, just a lot fewer players to talk about. So it's going to be short to the point. Well, of course, if you've been listening to me, you know I'm very rarely short and pithy, tend to be long-winded. But this is not going to run in length similar to the other positional analysis because you know, there's far more depth and requirements at the forward positions than there are in net. So it's interesting as I am putting this track down. We're 40 minutes in the books. Team USA does not look very good against Europe in the World Cup of Hockey. And kind of illustrates what these short tournaments are about, where if you don't get off to a good start, you're already behind the eight ball. USA is appears to be having a lot of trouble containing team speed there, or I should say team speed on the Euro side. Gabrick scored like right off the bat, and it just kind of set the tone. And when you look at the U.S. defense, what are they lacking in? Speed and mobility. And so, you know, it's great to have these veteran proven guys on your roster. But when you look at the excitement that Team North America has generated because they've got kind of the youth and real high-level skill, I'm looking at a guy like Shane Gostisbehere, and I'm saying to myself, why is he on Team North America, and why wasn't he on USA? Certainly looks like Ryan Suter is struggling. Matt Niskanen, to me, and just based on 40 minutes, has looked pretty good. But what does this have to do with the Bruins and goaltending? Well, you know, the bottom line is, you know, Jonathan Quick's a pretty accomplished goaltender, two-time Stanley Cup champion, one of the best we have in the USA, and, you know, former Avon Old Farms product and UMass, but he can't do it. He can't do it on his own, and just kind of shows you what speed, skill, and pace can do, even when you have an accomplished netminder. So that leads me into what the Bruins are kind of staring down the proverbial barrel of the gun here. Going into the season, in that a year ago, Tuukka Rask and Jonas the Monster Gustafsson were the two proven veterans in net. We had a Finnish-Swedish duo over there, and at times they were great, but at other times not so much. And really, when the Bruins needed them the most, neither player really put up the kind of inspiring performance that the team required to get them into the playoffs. Now, this is not to blame Tuukka Rask and Gus for what happened. It's a team game. I get that. I know there are Rask fans probably losing their mind that I'm, you know, not just sitting here doing nothing but singing his praises. But come on, let's have an honest discussion. Part of being an adult and having an intellectual adult, you know, adult table kind of conversation is to be able to take the various inputs and generate outputs in the form of an informed, mature discussion. And so if you're one of these people who just wants sunshine and unicorns and only wants to hear about how great Tuukka Rask is, you probably want to turn the podcast off now. Otherwise, please don't spam the blog with your outrage because, you know, again, I'm going to try to be even-handed and fair. That's what I'm about, and I just call it like I see it, as I've said in the past. Some people just aren't going to agree. That's fine. That's what, you know, disagreement's what makes the world go round. But I think if you're going through life and you expect consensus, that's one of the problems we have with the internet, is that, you know, people are trying to achieve consensus, and there are just too many people with too many, you know, diverse views out there. But I try to use evidence. I try to use my own experience, observations, and the observations of others to put it together. So obviously we'll start with Tuukka Rask because he is really the linchpin in net for the Boston Bruins franchise. He was a first-round pick. He came off the board, for those of you who might not recall, one choice before Boston. He was going to be their guy. I've had people within the organization tell me that. They were disappointed when Toronto snagged him. 21st overall in 05, they went with Matt Lashoff. But the interesting thing about hockey and scouting is that they just, you know, they kept tabs on him, and he went on to become the goaltender of the World Junior tournament in 06, even though he was, you know, ultimately the Toronto Maple Leafs had a pair of goalies in Rask and Justin Pogge, and Pogge was the most valuable player in Canada, won gold. What was interesting is that at the draft in 2006 in Vancouver, which interestingly enough was where the World Junior Championship had been held that year. So, you know, just 6 months earlier, Rask had backstopped Finland to a bronze medal and had played very well. Like I said, earning goaltender of the tournament honors, even though Pogge was the guy who was the big star. Yeah, the Bruins found themselves in position to acquire Rask from Toronto. The Leafs really, you know, had just lost Ed Belfour. They wanted a veteran in net. Bruins were having issues with Andrew Raycroft, who was unhappy over the unloading of Joe Thornton. And the Bruins were just coming off of that disastrous post-lockout season, 05-06. And so somehow Jeff Gorton, who was the interim GM at the time, and the Bruins were able to work with then Leafs GM John Ferguson Jr., who interestingly enough is, you know, in the Boston Bruins organization as an executive. The other day you may have seen the release. He was just named, in addition to his player personnel duties with the Bruins, was named a GM of the Providence Bruins. And JFJ dealt Rask to Boston, and the rest, as they say, is history. But it didn't quite come together right away for Rask. I mean, you may recall there was a guy named Tim Thomas who was in the net, and it took a while. But the Bruins were patient with Tuukka. Now remember this line of discussion, because it's going to come in later when we talk about Malcolm Subban. But the Bruins were patient with Rask. They didn't rush him. He ended up playing another season in Finland with Ilves Tampere. And at the end of that season, they signed him and brought him up. And they signed him to one of those ATOs, which allowed him to finish the 06-07 season in Providence when his Euro season ended. But he wasn't charged a year on the deal. And even though he didn't play, he was with the team, he practiced, started to get acclimated, and then 07-08, Rask began in earnest his first North American season. Saw some NHL action, got his first NHL win against, you guessed it, the Toronto Maple Leafs, and he's continued to have his way in his career against the team that drafted him. So if he's struggled against Montreal, and they're the team he's done the poorest against, he certainly seems to have Toronto's number over the course of his career. You may recall in 09-10, he came in finally full-time backup after Manny Fernandez had moved on, backed up Timmy Thomas, and then Thomas, coming off of his first of two Vezina trophy years with the Bruins, had that hip issue. And, you know, just things really kind of fell apart on him after the World Classic, or correction, World Classic, Winter Classic, Fenway, Frozen Fenway in 2010. Rask really kind of took the bulk of the starts, took over the starter's job down the stretch, and ultimately led the Bruins into the playoffs. They knocked off Buffalo in the first round and then built that 3-0 lead before the massive collapse against Philly. Ultimately, Thomas, as we all know, came back, won the Stanley Cup, and after the 2012 season, has been the man. Did prove absolutely huge and instrumental in getting the Bruins to the Stanley Cup final against Chicago in 2013. Unfortunately, was not able to be that extra difference. Let's face it, the Blackhawks were a superior team. I think to this day, Jarome Iginla might have been a difference maker, but who knows? I mean, the Blackhawks were just stacked, and they really came together. The Bruins had their chances to win that final series. We have to remember they had a lead in Game 1, lost it. They took Games 2 and 3, and then you know, lost Game 4 again in a crucial overtime situation. And but Tuukka Rask was definitely not the problem. He was superb for them. Probably would have been the Conn Smythe Trophy winner as playoff MVP that year. Just really made a case as a league star. Signed the big $7 million extension. Then went on to win the Vezina Trophy in his very first year under that new extension. Bees won the President's Trophy. Rask was outstanding. And then a little something funny happened on the way to the coronation, in that the Bruins as a team took a major step backwards in the 14-15 and 15-16 seasons. And I don't think it's unfair to say that while we can fully acknowledge that the Bruins team, especially the defense, has regressed in those 2 years since the Bruins won the President's Trophy as the regular season's top club, that Rask's play overall performance has been uneven at best. And so he is going to be a huge factor in how far the Bruins go. Now, on the positive side, Tuukka Rask is just a tremendous athlete. Excellent quickness, size, flexibility. You know, he's your modern butterfly goaltender who can just square up and drop down and recover very quickly. Tough to beat on the first shot. Just a really good goaltender all around in terms of his skill level and his tools. But I also think sometimes that the technician aspect of his game, the fundamentals, leads to a predictability. Let me give you an example, a real-world example of what I'm talking about. Back in about 2010, I was in the Washington, D.C. area, and I had a chance to kind of regularly cover the Caps. And I remember talking to Alexander Ovechkin for a period of time, just kind of, you know, after a practice and interviewing him off to the side. And the Bruins were coming to town, and I asked him about, you know, who the toughest goaltenders that he went up against were, and he didn't hesitate. I mean, he, you know, and granted, it might have been fresh in his mind because the Bruins were coming to town, but he said Tim Thomas, and so when we peeled the onion back and I started asking him why, what he talked about was the unpredictability, that he never really knew what Thomas was going to do. Sometimes he would charge him, you know, Ovechkin would be coming in with the puck and all of a sudden he'd look up and here's Thomas charging out at him. Sometimes he'd get real deep in his crease. Sometimes he'd come out to the top of the paint. Very rarely was just kind of dropping into that standard butterfly blocking position. He would kind of try a poke check maybe, or kind of slide around, do the two pad stack. I mean, we all remember Timmy Thomas and what he was able to accomplish. And sometimes that greatest strength of his, the unpredictability and the lack of technique, was his greatest strength, and it could be, you know, his biggest shortcoming as well. But in getting back to Tuukka, he kind of tends to be mechanical and robotic and automatic in the way he approaches the position. And so shooters kind of know what he's going to do. And, the better the shooter is and the more comfortable they are at playing against Tuukka, I think they're able to kind of make some hay against him at times. So, you know, look, he's a world-class athlete, a Vezina Trophy winner. I mean, he is in the top echelon. If he's not the upper elite tier of goaltenders in National Hockey League, he's pretty darn close. He's also, you know, just turned 29 last March, so he's about to hit the wrong side of 30, which, you know, is a concern, going forward, because, again, you just never know at what point, you know, he's still very much in his prime, but at what point are these players going to drop off the cliff? So when he's on top of his game and when he's in his fundamentals, you know, he is certainly capable of top level, top shelf performances. The other issue, though, I have with him is kind of what used to be one of his big strengths, which is he was mentally tough and he was able to kind of block out distractions and do very well. It seems of late he's gotten surlier and surlier, just in terms of dealing with adversity as he's matured. I wouldn't say even when Tuukka was a young goaltender and he was backing up Thomas, I won't ever say that he was this great guy that, you know, was a lot of fun. He kind of would roll his eyes and seem to get annoyed with, you know, certain line of questioning. And you know what, he's human. I'm not begrudging him that, but it just seems like the further he's gone along and the regression and success that the Boston Bruins have seen over the last couple of years, the harder, you know, Tuukka has been to pin down in terms of one, taking accountability and responsibility for his part, and playing kind of on an unstable situation with a defense that is up and down and can be a real adventure. I mean, look, one of the things that I always despised about Patrick Waugh when he was playing, even though he was a world-class Hall of Fame you know, just one of the greatest goaltenders in the history of the game. I hated the way he would show up teammates when they messed up. And, you know, call me old fashioned, call me whatever you will, but I am, you know, old school in my thinking in that, you know, you don't show up to teammates, you don't embarrass them. I'm a believer that people who are watching the game, by and large, many of them are smart enough to know who's messed up and who was directly responsible on a play that leads to a goal. And if it's not the goalie's fault, most people are fair-minded and are going to understand it. Sure, there are always the fans that just are always going to blame the goalie, but that's not the target audience here. Rask has a little bit of wah in him sometimes where he just, his body language is awful. And that has been something I've watched and I've been watching for some time now, and it's always bothered me. I also can remember being in scrums in the room and Tuukka would talk, you know, and when things were going well, I heard a lot of I this, and yeah, I was able to do that. And then, you know, after a loss or when things weren't going so well, I heard it was a lot of we and us and all. And you know what? Look, not every time. I'm not going to sit here and say that that's just the way he was, but that kind of stuff tends to be off-putting. So it drives, when I'm critical of Tuukka, those personal first-hand experiences, and this commentary is directed at the real Tuukka fans out there, okay? And again, we're having an honest discussion here. I fully acknowledge he's a heck of a talent, a great athlete, and without him, the Bruins would be in big, big trouble. But we also, when we have a debate, we put our big boy pants on, and we sit at the table and we acknowledge the other side. So this kind of is, you know, this is the caveat. And I'm not trying to be condescending. I'm just being a realist. I have the firsthand examples where I've seen this, right? So I'm not interested in what some other reporter or writer has to say about Tuukka, right? I'm giving you my own analysis. And I just think, I don't know that he is the right guy to take this kind of team forward, because this kind of team is going to continue to struggle. They have a defense that right now on paper is mediocre at best, and that might be being charitable. So we're going to have more examples this year, even though Don Sweeney is optimistic that they can hold it together. I'm not so sure they can. I think, you know, it's Groundhog Day. If you look at the Boston Bruins defense, and I'll do a whole podcast dedicated to them, but if you look at them, we're looking at a lot of the same faces that were on the team last year. The difference is going to be in the roles they had, and obviously Dennis Seidenberg isn't there anymore. So however Coach Julian and staff redistribute the ice time, and if there's someone else, maybe a younger guy that comes up, whether it's a Brandon Carlo, a Matty Grizzlick, a Rob O'Gara, I don't know. Or perhaps Don Sweeney is able to acquire a top two defenseman to come in and help this team. We're looking at a top pairing D. Look, that's the important thing. Like, the Bruins have plenty of bottom four defenders out there in the system. That's not, you know, we don't need to be worried so much about who's their number 3 to 6 guy. Because they have enough capable players to fill that role. Their challenge is their 1 and 2, and that's what's going to lead to the breakdowns in front of Tuukka, and ultimately decide whether he's going to have some of his bad body language meltdowns and tantrums that he's been known to have, either on camera during games or off camera when he kind of tends to be moody and disengaged in the room and ultimately not a great teammate. So I'm really interested to see what's going to happen. But I just think that the Bruins would be crazy not to be exploring potential trade options with Tuukka. And I know that's a controversial statement, and the people who are going to say, Kirk, you're on crack. If the Bruins trade Tuukka, you know, they're toast. You know, they just don't have anyone that can carry the mail. And you know what? I don't have anything to go against that. But I sometimes do believe in the power of addition by subtraction. And I just believe that you have to keep your options open and you have to give to get. And I think the obvious discussions about trades are centering around forwards and this and that, and, you know, the Ryan Spooners and the various young assets and futures and all of that. I don't think it's too crazy to say, hey, what if, you know, some of these teams out there that need, have the, maybe a defenseman or two to consider dealing, You know, would they take a Tuukka Rask? Because in a situation where he's on a contending team, we've seen what he can do. His ability's not in doubt. On a contending team, Tuukka Rask, great goaltender. And there's something to be said about that. Now, a team has to make the investment. It's a big cap hit, $7 million a year for four more seasons. But you know what? You pick him up maybe over the course of the season, you know, and it becomes a prorated cap hit for 1 year, and then you're carrying him for three more. You know, he's only, you know, he'll turn 30 in March. He's 33 when that deal ends. I just say, why not? You have to consider it, right? But a large extent of what's going to drive that is Anton Khudobin, because Dobie's back. And that was a solid signing. You know, the Bruins picked him up in the offseason, first day of free agency, signed him to a 2-year deal. I think part of that is you've got to give people up in the expansion draft. But the other part of it is the Bruins just genuinely like him. He's an oddball. He's a non-prototypical goalie. He's kind of a throwback to Tim Thomas in that he's a smaller guy. He doesn't have that 6'3", 6'4", 6'5" size and athleticism that the NHL teams are drafting in this day and age. But he is a proven commodity in that someone who can go out and play a pretty respectable game. It was funny. I saw on Twitter someone was saying, the Bruins never should have let him go. He didn't have a choice. He wanted to go. He was trying to go and be a starter. He didn't want to be another backup or be a backup too much longer behind Tuukka Rask, because he knew coming out of the 2013 season where they went to the Stanley Cup final, which was his only real full season in Boston. He had played sporadically the year before, and he was on the Black Aces practice roster. Some may remember he was acquired during the 2010-11 season. The Bruins traded Jeff Penner and Mikko Leitinen to Minnesota for Anton Khudobin. He's been around, but he didn't play a lot. I think he's got like 14 games in a Boston Bruins uniform. So, you know, the Bruins now have another experienced goaltender, but he's at a lower rate to offset the high Tuukka Rask contract. He's just $1 million goaltender, but that gives you $8 million in your goalies. I just think you have to have a better performance if you've got $8 million in your goaltenders and $7 million is dedicated to one player. Now, do I have an issue? I'm not saying that you didn't want to sign Tuukka to the 7-year, $7 million max, 7-year max deal, $7 million annual cap hit. That's not the point. At the time, they really had no choice. He had just brought them within a couple games of a second Stanley Cup championship in 3 years. But now I think the Bruins have to think long term, and they have to be willing to make some tough calls. And I think honestly, I think this conversation's been had. I mean, there are sources out there that have said the Bruins have talked and considered trading Tuukka Rask before. I can't verify that. No one within the organization has said anything about that, and I don't think they would, because that's just the kind of thing that sources don't tend to reveal. But when you're talking about other sources outside organizations, if those conversations have been had, you can't rule out that might leak out. And so I just think, I think that a lot of it's going to depend on how Khudobin looks, and then Malcolm Subban, in terms of what, Don Sweeney can or can't do. And maybe the answer is Tuukka Rask plays great. He's a great teammate this year. He's feeling better about the team. Some of the offense is offsetting the defensive challenges that they are going to have, because these are they're the same players. You're not going to see a significant uptick. There's a very good chance you're not going to see much of an uptick at all. And another chance that you're going to see a regression in performance. Bruins fans hope not, but we have to be realistic here. So how is Rask going to take that? Is he the kind of goaltender you see long-term on a team that's got to either, if they're not going to retool, right, if this retool fails, then they're going to have to rebuild. And you're going to have young guys coming up, and it's going to be even more frustrating. So I have to think the Bruins are thinking about this. But ultimately, Rask is the number one. When he's on his game, he's as good as they come. He deserved the Vezina Trophy, you know, 3 years ago, going on 3 years ago. And he's got ability. He's got major league ability. I just think he could be a better teammate and he could be more consistent. You cannot, I think it's intellectually dishonest to just point to the defense, say, well, they are underperforming, ergo that excuses Rask. I don't think there are any excuses. And, you know, if you recognized my intro music, you understand where I'm coming from. Okay, enough on that. Khudobin. Welcome back, Doby. I mean, he's a, you know, they called him Borat in Minnesota because, you know, he came from Kazakhstan, although he did play for the Russian national team, played junior hockey in the WHL with the Saskatoon Blades, once had a playoff game where he made 70-something saves. I think I want to say it was 77. It was some just unreal amount. So when he's on his game, man, he's tough to beat. Again, we talked about the fact that he's undersized and he is a bit unorthodox. So he's one of those, he can be one of those streaky guys where when he's on his game, he's hot, he's doing well. But when he's struggling, fighting the puck a little bit, he can be susceptible to those high shots and really, you know, have a hard time and struggle a bit. You know, good player, good guy, very loose, very quirky, but in a good way. Teammates like him. He's a great ad. And I think he is going to give Claude Julien enough confidence to just, you know, sit Rask, rest him on the back-to-backs, give Doby a chance. And who knows if anything happens to Rask, Khudobin is the kind of guy that could, you know, take the ball and run with it a little bit. Whereas if you've got a Malcolm Subban in there, you know, this is an unproven, untested guy. It's hard to trust that Subban can hold up and you know, string together, you know, a lot of consecutive starts if there are injury problems. But he's got to get ready to go. Let's talk about Malcolm. First round pick in 2012. He's on the goaltender timeline. We're now 4 years after he was drafted. He can't seem to catch a break. Last year, he was on track. After a real rough start, had a lower body injury and was not good in November to December with Providence, which was kind of a direct reflection of that lower body injury. Look, you know, when you're a goaltender like him and you have such very quick pads and such explosive movements in your skating, I mean, the way he telescopes and moves and round the crease and his lateral, you know, the power he gets behind his lateral pushes and the way he moves out of the net with just digging his edges in and just generating so much strength and power and force. That's a tough thing if you're dealing with a lower body injury, whether it's an ankle, whether it's a groin, whether it's a hip. I mean, you know, that is such a debilitating injury. So he looked like he was nursing a lower body injury. But by December, he really, you know, he got healthy and he turned his game around and was playing the best hockey of his career. Everything was going great for him into January. And then they were playing the Portland Pirates, and during warmups, one of his own, you know, he took a shot in the throat from one of his own players, fractured his larynx, and lost for the season. And just like that, so much promise. I believe, given the way things went at the end there for the Bruins, there's a good chance that had Subban continued to play like he was in Providence, the Bruins would have maybe called him up and maybe given him an opportunity to save a few games. Maybe that's just, you know, being a Monday morning quarterback or GM or you know, coach, whatever you want to call it. But he was really playing some of the best hockey of his career. And yes, his conspicuous debut against St. Louis, you know, the season before last, where he was, you know, lit up and pulled. I have to think that the thought would have at least crossed Don Sweeney's mind to maybe capture lightning in a bottle, give him another shot, because boy, he was on a roll. Unfortunately for Subban, out for the year, so we don't know. He's going to be rusty. He's going to need some time to work himself into shape. He went to development camp for that reason, but he's not at the rookie tournament. Zane McIntyre and Dan Vladosh are so. Yeah, it's going to be a huge year. I remember when Tuukka signed the original extension in 2013. A lot of fans immediately were like, "Wait, what does this mean for Subban?" And I said at the time, "Nothing. You know, they're going to hold on him. They're going to try to develop him." Because remember, I mentioned earlier, when Rask was acquired and he was the young gun coming up with so much potential in net and athletic ability and upside, the Bruins had Tim Thomas, and they didn't rush Rask. They just let him continue to develop, and they were patient, and they resisted the temptation, unlike Toronto, to trade him for a quick fix, which, you know, as it turns out, was a very quick fix. Didn't last very long. Raycroft was out of Toronto pretty quick after that first full season he played. But, you know, now, I don't know, all bets are off. I think the Bruins really are at the stage now where Subban really needs to show something. It's not as simple as just trade him, because his value is not all that high. So unless you're talking about throwing him into a deal, that's going to be a challenge. But on the upside, when Subban is on his game, boy, he's as good as anybody. He's so athletic, but the technique issues are a bit of a question mark with him. He came to the position late, so he was always a little rough around the edges in terms of fundamentals. But as I said earlier, that's not the worst thing in the world, to be a little unpredictable and not just be this mechanical, predictable goaltender that just butterflies and, you know, holds your glove a certain way and your blocker a certain way and always does the kind of thing that the shooters are expecting. So the optimist in me says Subban's going to have a good year and he's going to push for some playing time in Boston, especially if there are injuries. I think they will certainly not hesitate to bring him up. And you never know. There might – something else could happen, right? Something that I alluded to earlier in this podcast. So you keep an open mind, but he's got to perform and he's got to stay healthy. I think this is a crucial crossroads year for Subban. It's make or break. You know, he's either gonna make a case for them. And what's interesting, my friend Dominic Tiano, one of the Three Amigos, was talking about how the Bruins will have to expose him to the expansion draft. And in all likelihood, you know, is a team going to draft a guy like Malcolm Subban if he has no NHL body of work? It really all depends on what, you know, what other goaltenders are out there. I think that is less of a certainty. However, should he get some opportunity to play some NHL games and look good, what Dom pointed to that he thinks is the genius in the Khudobin signing is that Subban, by virtue of being a restricted free agent, when the season ends, he might be in a window where without a qualifying offer, he can't be protected or he can't be picked up in the expansion draft. And the Bruins might be able to wait it out. We'll have to see. That's CBA stuff. That's lawyer stuff. But ultimately, what we have to answer by talking to agents and people who know the CBA in and out is whether the Bruins might have the ability to kind of game the system a little bit and not hold off on their QO to Malcolm until after the expansion draft. And by the rules, Malcolm would not be exposed because he potentially wouldn't have a qualifying offer. My apologies, Dom, if I didn't get that completely right, but I think that was kind of the gist of what you were driving at. So whether he's exposed, not exposed, we'll find out. But if he doesn't play much NHL action, he doesn't have enough of a body of work, in my opinion, that he's a real risk to being plucked. And even if he is, I mean, you know, what are you going to do? That's kind of the way these things go. Next on the depth chart is Zane McIntyre. Again, I've known Zane since the Bruins drafted him in 2010 in the sixth round. He's been in the organization a long time. You can say he's grown up here. Turned pro last year instead of going back for his senior season in North Dakota. I know that was hard for him to be in Providence and have the ups and downs he did and then watch North Dakota win the national championship. But he's just a really solid citizen, stellar performer on and off the ice. Yes, it was disappointing the way things went at times for him in Providence, but he also showed flashes of what he could be, and it was pretty impressive when he's on his game. And he's another one of these goalies who came in with, you know, in high school at Thief River Falls High when he won the Frank Brimczak as the top Minnesota high school goalie in 2010. You know, he didn't have the greatest technique, but he just had heart and he had the athletic ability and the drive to go in and make saves. You know, he learned some at the USHL with playing for the Fargo Force, and he ended up being the goaltender of the year. He was co-goaltender of the year, shared that award his second year before he went off to North Dakota. But he just showed this ability to improve, refine his technique, get better, And he's always had this mental ability to either be the backup or be the starter. And that's a rare commodity in a goaltender. Some guys, you know, are great at being the workhorse, but if you put them in a lesser role, they really struggle because they're not allowed to kind of work into a rhythm. They see sporadic starts, or they come in cold off the bench if the starter gets lit up. And, you know, Zane has always seemed to have the ability to thrive in either role. And, you know, this year he was kind of thrown into the fire. The plan was not for him to start most of the games in October, but Subban's injury this past, you know, a year ago, forced McIntyre into the AHL lineup, and, you know, he was there kind of night after night in most cases. And, you know, he had some good games and some not so good games, but I think the experience overall helped him, and it'll be an important bounce back season for him. Cause I think there are some concerns that, playing on such a good team like North Dakota, where he won the Mike Richter Award as the NCAA's top goaltender in his junior season, his last year there, 2015, before he turned pro, might have hid some flaws in his game, and that very good team system and team defense that Dave Hackstall had before he left and went to be the Philadelphia Flyers coach kind of covered up for Zane a little bit. I know Zane's heard those comments. I know he does not appreciate them. And it's up to him to go out and show it this year. I believe he has the ability and the upside to do it, but he's going to have to go down to Providence and work hard, and he's going to have to do the best he can where it is expected that, unless he's hurt, Malcolm Subban's going to get the bulk of the starts. Last goalie we'll talk about in the Bruins system, Daniel Vladosh. Called him Daniel Vladar before, and my friend Ivana Palova in Toronto, who's Czech, pointed out to me that I had it wrong, that it's Vladosh. So the Darth Vladar nicknames doesn't have the same ring with Darth Vladosh, but this is a huge guy, 6'5", just a terrific athlete, quick. Another butterfly goalie who's extremely tough to beat on the first shot, and drops into, you know, when he drops to his knees and keeps his torso upright and flares those pads out, you know, good luck. Doesn't give you much net to hit. Really good guy, too. I've heard from multiple sources that he's just the nicest, most polite kid. Played the year with the Chicago Steel of the USHL. And kind of goaltending duties were split down the middle, which was curious to me because Vladosh seemed to have the better numbers and seemed to be the better player. But, you know, that's how the Steel played it. But Bruins signed him, so he can't go to college. He can't go to major junior because of the import rule, so we'll have to see where he ends up. But he is a long-term project, extremely raw, but good player, and third-round pick and solid. And again, he's your upside. He's your guy that maybe has the best upside of all of them, and we'll just have to see how he goes. So that's the podcast. Hope you've enjoyed it. I think we covered a lot of ground. And again, I'm not trying to poke Rask supporters in the eye. I think he's a heck of a goalie. And I think if we're honest with ourselves, there's room for improvement on his part too. And it's kind of lazy to just blame the team in front of him. He's got to take accountability. So if he's able to do that and weather through it and be more consistent this year, Bruins have a shot at the playoffs. If not, look out. For the Scouting Post, this is Kirk Ludeke. We have one more podcast for you, The Defenseman. Thanks for your time, and I'm out of here.